Hello, lovely humans. I'm Wiley, and you are listening to X Stories, a podcast where we learn about connections, kinks, and pleasure by sharing experiences so we can inspire one another to make the whole wide world a sexier, more loving place, beginning with our own personal spheres. And our guest today is a late 30s Jewish queer who's been in a 12-year-long relationship and enjoys being a slutty leather dyke. She loves hot tubs, oh, me too, community building, and leather worship. A tattoo artist originally from South Florida and New York City who currently lives in Los Angeles, welcome Katie Diamond.
Hi.
I am so excited to have you here. Can you please start off by rating yourself on a sexual shame-o-meter? If 10 is the highest and 1 or 0 is like, no way, where do you fall today shame-o-meter-wise and why?
I mean, I think it may change depending on the scenario, but
it can get squiggly. Generally,
yeah, it can get squiggly. But for the most part, I think I kind of operate on like a 2 or 3. Like I'm not really concerned about what other people think. I feel like that's where shame kind of comes from, is our concern about people's perception about us. I had to let that go forever ago. I can't think about that. It's too much. It takes up too much space in my mind. So
I feel that. When do you notice it squiggle up or down? As much as we don't want it to, mine still gets squiggly sometimes, but what about you?
You know, I think that it feels related to how connected I feel to the people in the room. In a shocking turn of events, I feel like the more vulnerable I feel, the more of a chance of feeling shame or embarrassment might occur in a scene, at a sex party, someplace where maybe on the bus, you know what I mean? Like if I'm surrounded by people that I really care about, then I obviously their concept of me is more important than like a stranger that I encounter, you know?
Whoa, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't know, I'm going to have to noodle if I'm the same. I mean, I've been asking this question for years also, but I am rediscovering myself every day. When do you feel the least shame?
Honestly, when I'm surrounded by a bunch of like very horny homosexuals who are all like on the same page, and maybe everyone's like a little naked, little dirty, little sweaty, little gross.
Totally.
Like when we all have the same, like I like to call it like threshold syndrome. When we've all like entered the room knowing what we're engaging in, like that's a totally different situation. The shame can go out the window.
Absolutely.
I mean? Not to like immediately bring it here within like the first few minutes, but like, have you read Brené Brown? Like, have you read Daring Greatly? Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the connection of like vulnerability and shame and courage, like they're all like one big, like mushy loop. So.
Totally. Totally. Someone recently told me that I was Brené Brown mixed with Esther Perel and a dash of Nina Hartley. And I was like,
sexy.
Okay. I don't really have the degrees.
What a compliment.
I know. I was like, thank you.
What a compliment.
Also, yeah, maybe I should go study shame. I guess I am. I totally relate. And also I'm like, when I get to the naked parts with whoever I'm doing naked things with, you know, whether it's erotic photo and video and I'm just the photographer or whether we're playing together, I feel like that's when I'm like, I'm here. Nothing can bother me now. You know, it's usually a closed space, et cetera. There's a sense of permission. And it's in those unknown moments or the sort of like, oh, shit, did I do something wrong to like bother someone I care about is kind of when it comes up for me. Or, yeah, lately it's been like fear stuff too. So tell us, how did you learn about sex, connection, and pleasure? What was your personal path to being the leather dyke that you are?
We're going to get weird. Are you ready to get weird?
So ready, okay. Yes.
So when I was a youth, you know, I'm an artist. I've been drawing forever. I became obsessed with drawing. Do you remember Jughead from the Archie comics?
Yes.
I became obsessed with drawing him eating a lot of burgers and his belly getting really big. And I now know in retrospect that like there was some part of me that like was horny for his big belly. And then the next phase, and I've heard other people have had like sexual experiences, like revelations from this. But there's also the animated film E.B. White's Charlotte's Web.
Oh, yes. I watched it. Okay. Templeton. I tried to tell someone about that song recently.
The Templeton fair scene.
Yeah.
His belly gets really big.
Gets really big. Yep.
And starts to like sway around and be so soft and gooey. And as a child, I would rewind and watch that scene over and over and over again because something about it was it was hitting a nerve. It was hitting a nerve that I now understand is connected to some sort of like, I could probably talk about it in therapy forever. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's something about the like, squishy, gooey, touchy, like, you know, like, it's not about the food necessarily.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
about the concept of like something that's like swollen and like engorged. You know what I mean? But at the time, I was just like, wow, Templeton, rewind. Well, Templeton, rewind. Do you know what I mean? And so
sure
I
do.
Would argue that that might be the earliest, like most nascent, like before I understood what was going on, I knew that drawing those pictures and watching Templeton sway about with his big belly, like it was horny. I was maybe like 7, 8, 9, but like it was horny, something about it. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
That's
it was,
so-
and I've heard other people talk about it. So I had this moment where I'm like, we should start like a subreddit or something about people
totally.
Who discovered as a child that they were horny, not for Templeton, but the concept of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's like an abstraction too. You know what I mean? Which, you know, eventually became more than that. Do you know what I mean? But the very first, I think really is related to those things, which also I've always been somebody who's much more turned on by like illustrated porn than anything else. Do you know what I mean? Like I much prefer like comic books and really sexy images that people drew.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, that was always my favorite scene and song. And there was something about like the sneaking into the fair, the having whatever you want, and the just like being so happy. And yeah, I think the cartoonness of showing the emphasis of whatever parts we want to, you know, you can do anything in a cartoon, which is pretty fun about it. So how did that develop? And like, when did you realize what horniness was?
Well, you know, to get like explicit about it, I forget what age it was, but like I would stuff my shirt with pillows as a child after that and was like, oh yeah, this is like so hot. I didn't realize it was hot, but you know, it was like one of those things where I was like, yeah, like something about this is making me feel like all tingly in my body. Do you know what I mean? Like stuff
yeah,
like that.
I sure do.
Eventually that turned into like, you know, grinding on the pillows, you know, like there was a transitional moment where I was like, but what if I actually like instead rubbed myself up against this, like something connected. And I don't remember like when or how, but like something connected where I was like, wait a second. So some like frottage or whatever, like became like a part of it, which turned into then eventually like actually masturbating.
Okay.
But like the transitions, realizing that like engorged things were exciting, like looking a little engorged or like, you know, big myself and then rubbing up against those things and then being like, but wait a second, I could like rub myself.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That is a possibility.
Did you ever get any like guidance about sex or pleasure from adults you trusted, like whether it was school or parents or other people?
You know, I grew up in South Florida and it's always been a bit of a trash fire, but I happen to be just old enough that they did have sex education in my elementary school. I remember very vividly in third grade, they separated the boys and the girls. And they like brought the boys all into one room and all the girls into another room. And they actually like turned the lights off and made us all sit on the floor. And the teacher sat on the floor with us. So it was like kind of this very like intimate, like they removed the concept of it being like classroom. And instead we're like, hey, we're going to sit in a circle. She had a bag of like objects that were mostly about menstruation, but she did have some like little diagrams. And, you know, it's third grade. So we're all like 8, 9. Some of us were about to get our periods. So that made sense. But I remember Miss Barnett sat on the floor with us in the dark classroom. And she said, we're going to talk about a lot of things that maybe no adult has talked to you about before, but I'm going to get something out of the way so you all like can really focus. And she looked at this crew of 8-year-old girls and she said, penis. And I need you to know that an adult looking us in the eye and saying the word penis, we lost our shit. We were like, oh, God. But I have to give her some credit. It really like set the tone that she was like, okay, we got that out of our system. Now we're going to talk about like, you know, how your bodies work a little bit. And I think about that regularly because she really did us a solid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the tone of that is beautiful. I love Miss Barnett. Fuck yeah.
I know. Public schools in Florida before everything got completely awful. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you like talk about sex with your friends? What was the vibe like in your household? Also, like, when did you become aware of your queerness? Whatever feels most salient.
Yeah. So my mom has never been good at talking about anything. She handed me a book about puberty. Gosh, what's the name of it? Something ominous from the 70s. Do you know what I mean? It's like one of those things where it's like one of those illustrated books that's like, it happens to everybody. body. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like yeah, something yeah. wild. Like that was like kind of the max. She like kind of flipped through it with me at one point, but for the most part, she was like, you seem to have things, questions. Here, take this book. My little sisters are about 7 years younger than me. And my mom was a single mom for a lot of my time growing up. And so I was often the person that was in, like the kid that was sent to after school programming or did all of the after school events or, and then also during the summers, I was sent to a summer camp in Massachusetts for mm-hmm. many years, which I like, I tell all of my friends, like asterisks to the story. If you can afford it, send your kid to sleepaway camp because yeah. it made me so independent and it gave me such like a sense of myself mm. that you can't really get when you're in the context of your family.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of really cool sex ed stuff. That was the first time I was like 12 when one of the counselors used the word pansexual in front of me. And I went, what is that? And she sat down and she was like, let me explain it. And like, there was a sex education course, like one of the weekends where like one of the counselors like had like diagrams. And then they basically were like, there's no stupid questions, and would pass around a hat where you could like popcorn in a bunch of stuff. And so I think that in retrospect, my mom was like, I don't have the capacity to care for three children. I will send the eldest away. This will be good for her. And I don't think she realized that it meant that I like understood like sexuality, queerness, radical politics, like these, like it was, she sent me to like a hippie camp in Massachusetts and she Amazing. Did not know what she was getting back. I think that I went there for 7 years. Like, so it's one of those things where like I was indoctrinated. So, yeah. you know, yeah.
That's so cool. Was that also a place where like explorations happen?
It was literally called Exploration.
Oh, really?
It was called it was literally called Exploration Summer Program or Expo. And it went junior, intermediate, senior.
Okay.
And in the senior program, we all called it Sexpo.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So did you do your exploring there, or like what were your kind of like formative, important experiences with partners?
You know, speaking of shame, like I knew from a young age that I was queer, but it wasn't necessarily in the most active, like it was more of like a reactive than a like proactive. It was more of me witnessing when everybody was starting to hit puberty. Like, so when I was like, I think it was sixth grade or seventh grade is when Titanic came out for me, and everybody was fucking obsessed with baby Leonardo DiCaprio. And I was like, this guy doesn't do it for me. And I don't understand why all of you keep talking about him. It's very confusing. And so it was a lot of me being like, well, I just don't think I like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just don't think I like that. And I struggled for a long time vocalizing it and verbalizing it, even though I went to a really progressive summer camp, even though all of my friends like back at home in Florida were incredibly supportive. And I knew a lot of queer people or like sort of baby queer people who maybe didn't fully know what they were. Do you know what I mean? But
yes.
It took me a long time. I actually did not do anything sexually until I was out of the house. And I think it was entirely like fear of like how like honestly homophobic my family is. Do you know what I mean? Like they've done a lot of work, but I just knew it was going to be like a major issue.
So what did you do?
I mean, I went to college and I finally like started like going to parties and like making out with girls.
Okay. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. We're going to fill in the gaps, but first I want to pause here and say, as a slutty human, what health and safety practices do you require to feel safe with a lover, whether it's someone that you are familiar with or new people or do you, yeah. Tell us kind of the texture of your like adult slut life.
Yeah. 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 Well, to the point of like the leather stuff, like being just like a leather dyke, like, you know, kinky human, lately a lot of my practices aren't about necessarily like being penetrated or being touched that way. Like it's all about like play. Mm. And so it's all about like getting close to the edge of something or there being some sort of layer of either protocol or boot blocking or licking or stomping. And then a lot of that stuff gets everyone like very horny. But like, I found that something that's going on for me right now is just that like my sluttiness is about that. Like, I want to crawl all over you and make out, but I definitely like want us to like fixate on like, what leathers are you wearing? Like, oh my God, look at those boots. Step all over me, please, mistress. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But in general, like everyone should have gloves, in my opinion, all the time, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like just straight totally. Up. And I think that honestly, the most equipped everyone should be, and this goes for anything that like I like to do when I'm also like being a grand maestro of like, you know, sort of like being like the person in the room that's like taking their Barbie dolls and being like, kiss, but with real people, you know, communication is like, I think my numero uno. That means that everyone can be on the same page. So we can all have elaborate conversations about like, what are you into? What do you want? And then the safety comes from, what do you have in your tool belt in terms of your ability to say what is or isn't working for you in those moments?
Is that something you prefer to do like ahead of time crafting a connection, or do you like show up at a play space? Like, can you give us a sense of the texture and the level of conversation? Also, I just want to reflect, it sounds like you're cool with like make out fluid exchange. Do you do anything about like, do you have a cold? Are you a COVID person? You know, like what? Because for me, become, I get sick so easily. So I'm like, well, maybe we can fuck, but not kiss. I don't know. You know,
when I first started really like leaning into the level of sort of like make out, like, you know, party slut, this is not science. FYI, like for all of those listeners out there, I would always have whiskey and be like, it's antiseptic. Like that's not a thing. I need everyone to know that it's absolutely not a thing. However, I did not actually get very sick when I was really like pre-COVID, like really just being like, hello, everybody. Amazing. Like, I don't know. There's no science to it. In my 20s was a lot of staying up very, very, very late. And not getting wasted, but always having that little like making out with someone and then being like, oh yes. So that's not a thing. You know, to the point of threshold syndrome, as I like to call it, a lot of the times I'm not necessarily playing with somebody who's like a complete and utter stranger.
Okay.
Because I will say that is the pro of having like the Venn diagram of like queer, leather, spaces where there's a lot of like industry folks and sex workers, like, I lately, when I go to a party, I know a lot of the people there. And we've probably like had flirty conversations. And so there's already been a priming of the pump, if you will, that by the time we get to the party, I can turn to someone, I can turn to my like friend number one and be like, hey, we've been teasing each other about how you want XYZ. Like, so what are we going to do tonight? You know what I mean? Like, we've kind of already gone past that.
Okay.
And to the point of what we were talking about at the very top, when it comes to vulnerability, I'm aware that that makes me feel a lot safer. Do you know what I mean? Like, some people have friends that they go bowling with. You know what I mean? And like, I have friends that I watch them fist their partner.
That's so cool. So are you, I'm getting the sense that you're toppy.
Yes, I'm a switch. But okay. Yes, like, yeah.
Will you just tell us like some of your favorite things, and maybe keeping in mind that not necessarily all the audience knows about the leather community? Like, I would just love to hear kind of your favorite things to do with your not bowling slutty friends.
I love punching people. It's called impact play. Anything that will let me either use my hands or an implement is really exciting to me. I sort of joke that I am a back alley queer in the sense that I want to be able to use everything that's on my body. So like my boots, my belt, my leather gloves, and then we're going to go from there. Do you know what I mean? I'm not a big like carry a toy bag with all the fancy things in it. Okay. Like, I really appreciate people who are like that. Like, I've been at parties where it feels like people have like, you know, these like, and it's like, there's like a million drawers and they're like, ha ha, hoo-hoo, ha ha, like fantastic. I'm a simple man and I want to be able to fuck you up with whatever my body is doing. And so part of the reason I like impact, that is with just like the weight of the body. Like, I've got, for instance, like these really incredible boots. They're called West Coast. Mm. Part of the name of it is that they're West Coast made. The heels of West Coast are like, they're engineer boots. They're for people that are like literally climbing up on telephone poles. Mm-hmm. They have steel toes and they've got big, chunky, chunky heels. I like to wear those boots because they're basically shit-kicking boots. They do a lot of the work for me. And something that I've regularly done is I basically surf on top of people because I'm a very tiny person. So I'll lay people out face down and I can, with a chair or a wall or maybe a supporting friend, like I can put like the one boot laterally, like right above somebody's like booty / like hips, you know, very carefully. You have to know what you're doing anatomically so you don't hurt people. One boot, like approximately booty, and then one boot, like sort of perfectly between their shoulder blades. And you can just sway back and forth and it compress people. And what it does to people is it's almost like when somebody has just finished like it's the ecstatic experience of compression and massage, and also like having an entire person stand on top of you.
That's so cool. Do you ever fall over? I would worry that I would fall over and then squish everybody in pointy ways.
You know, the key is to always have, like, if you're going to do it, for instance, like in the corner of a room, like, so you can use the wall to sort of really support yourself, use the back of a chair to support yourself, or, you know, inevitably a lot of people want to watch that. So you encourage the audience, if you will, to sort of like be your support. Cause you don't want to move too quickly with it because that could cause damage. You want to compress and crush and like,
also, we don't want to rush anything for the one experiencing a crush. Like, I don't want my crush to be over.
Why are we rushing this? Yeah, no.
Oh, damn. Okay, one of my big fantasies is just having a literal adult playground. And I'm like, this would be perfect for the parallel bars. Like, oh.
Yes, exactly. Dang.
Or under the jungle gym. Okay, wow. What else?
Back to sort of like childhood. Growing up, instead of having a like blankie, I had a leather glove that my grandma gave me. It was an Italian leather glove. Oh. I know. Like, grandma, why would you give me Italian leather gloves when I was like an infant? And so when I was a child, I loved smelling that leather glove. I loved the smell of it. And so I literally developed this thing, which then of course subsequently made it so I had to have braces, but I would suck my fingers like this and hold the leather glove in my pinky ring finger and thumb, so that I could hold it, like fall asleep with the smell of the leather.
Wow.
Upon sharing this with one of my like first like bigger relationships in my really early 20s, my partner at the time looked at me and he was like, oh, you like leather, huh? Let me introduce you to something. And so that was how I learned boob blacking, is basically the person who was my daddy at the time introduced me to his daddy. And Levi and I spent an entire afternoon together. We like made a big pot of coffee and Levi laid out every type and texture of leather possible and all of the tools that you use to take care of them. And we went piece by piece by piece. And that was how I learned boob blacking. It was September of 2007 because it was at Dark Odyssey summer camp. And after that, I like didn't really know what to do next with it, to be entirely honest. I knew I was excited about it, but you know, it's like anything when you're entering into a new world and a new scene, like, you know, what's the point of entry gets complicated, right? It's like I had some of the concepts and some of the skills, but I didn't quite know how to like move myself into the next world. And then I feel so, it's the joy of metamors. Like my metamor, Anna, she gifted me a vintage boob black kit for Hanukkah that year. I still have it. It like has her like original note in the cover of it. And she like, what she had done is she'd found like a pre-made little like kit on eBay and like gifted to me for Hanukkah. And I got myself on a bus. I was living in Portland, Maine at the time. I got myself on a bus, met up with a bunch of friends in Providence, Rhode Island. They scooped me into their car. So I took a 3-hour bus to Providence, Rhode Island. This is some early 20s shit. This is like shit that I would never do. And literally like, There's a party in New York that's been going on for over 25 years. It's called Submit. And Submit Party is in Park Slope, of all places, in the basement of this like old brownstone. And my friends scooped me from Providence and in their car, and we drove from Providence to New York, which anyone who understands the geography of the Northeast, I was in a car for like 8 hours. I was in a bus in a car like for 8 hours. Like it was a lot. We literally got ourselves to a diner, ate some food, and went right to that party. And I walked up to the person running the party, the person who founded the party is this person, Red, who is lovely and has now like kind of stepped away from it. But for years, Red was running this party. I walked up to Red and I was like, I really want to boob black at this party, but I don't know what to do. And Red grabbed me a chair and a really fancy, like, you know, red light and was like, here, like have this corner. And according to my friend Lauren, who was with me, I was the belle of the ball at that party. I was on my knees taking care of people's boots. It was my first time doing anything like it.
Okay.
The party started at like 10 p.m. We didn't leave until 6 o'clock in the morning.
Holy shit.
I didn't stop. That's all I did. I took care of people's leathers. I licked people's boots. I like made out with people. It was wild. And then my very last person who I took care of, you know, the sun is like starting to come up. They were like, you've been working so hard. Can I give you a massage? And so basically, like, I ended the night getting, like, a nice, like, rub down because I was, like, on my knees for, like, hours.
Wow.
And that set me off on like a whole, like, this is totally my shit. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Lovers, this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. We all know that the foundation to an awesome sex life is excellent mental and physical health, but if proper rest, exercise, and a healthy lifestyle aren't leading to the blood flow you'd like when and where you'd like it, check out BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever the opportunity arises. And the process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you are approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no dealing with awkward physicians who aren't trained to talk about sex lives, plus no waiting in line at the pharmacy. BlueChew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet pack. They always say first impressions are important, but what about lasting impressions? Lovers, I do believe that we can always make loving, lasting impressions by connecting and being present and chasing our pleasure and our partner's pleasure. And if your priority is making a deep, deep impression between two beautiful, enthusiastic thighs or cheeks in the name of partnered pleasure, I get it. I've worn a strap on now. I, too, love having a hard cock. Blue Chew and I want you to have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code LOVER at checkout. You just pay $5 for shipping. That is BlueChew.com, promo code LOVER to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And thank you to Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
Can I ask a couple of like specific details that are total newbie questions?
Lay it on me.
When you're taking care of other people's boots, are you like polishing them? And then if you lick them, are you getting polish on your mouth? Like, does your tongue turn black? Do you get poisoned? Like, what happens? What do we need to know?
These are great questions. If you're doing your job right, you should not be getting any product when you're like actually following up. There's different processes. Like some people will clean the boot and get all of the dirt and like, you know, like various, you know, city life away. And then some people will lick and then they'll, you know, everyone's got their own process. Like I like to, from start to finish, like clean, buff, polish, and then lick the boot all over. And then I might give one more little wipe down and put the person's laces back in. And, you know, depending on what happens, you know, that's my method. But you basically shouldn't be using so much product that you're tasting it in any way. Do you know what I mean?
Now I do. What about, I'm sure this is different for every person who you, what do you say, service, like, or boot black?
Yeah.
Like, do you just, okay. What kinds of connections have you experienced? Like, are you so focused on your task or are you like connecting with them in a certain way? Or like, what are kind of like your favorite textures of that to either give or receive? Do you receive now too? Like,
oh yeah. So I was international. I won a title. I won what is known as a leather title, which, you know, we can talk more about that. And that's the intricacies of leather titles and so on and so forth. But I went from the trajectory of being like, I used to smell leather glove to like, I'm on my knees for a million hours. Like, wow, I'm obsessed with this thing. Like I started volunteering for International Miss Leather. I decided to run for International Miss Boot Black. Like I won that in 2011. So I've had to sit for a lot of people because I give feedback. I've judged contests. I've received in that way.
Cool.
But it's a little bit like the shoemaker's children have no shoes. Do you know what I mean? Like I regularly look at my own boots and I'm like, ah, shit, those look terrible. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm like regularly focusing on other people. Like with any practice, there are so many ways that you can approach a practice and the flair or the specialty that people bring to it. And similar to the concept of me being like a back alley, like homosexual, I am very much like a simple boot black. Like I don't tend to have a ton of fancy products. I really just want everyone's leathers to be taken care of.
Yeah.
I don't tend to repair the leather. It's all about like upkeep. It's not about fixing holes or fixing things because the connection is more important to me. Like I'm going to make your leather look good. Mm-hmm. But I don't go into like a K-hole of focus. Like for me, if someone sits down in my stand to like walk you through it, I can tell as I'm taking that those person's laces out or as I'm examining their boots, like putting my hands in their boots, I can tell what sort of experience people are anticipating. Some people do want to just smoke a cigar, like play on their phone, talk to their friend, drink their drink and cruise because it's a great cruising spot. You can flirt with everybody. You can see everybody. You're on a raised element. You can look out over the party or the festival or wherever we're at. Some people, I can tell, it's almost like they're a flower bending towards the sun. They will lean towards me and their whole body will be very invested. They'll be like, so what are you doing? So what's that? Like, they'll ask questions. They'll make eye contact with me. Maybe they'll even start to put their hands on me while I'm working. And then I know they want a very specific type of experience. They want me to, every time I do anything, they want me to look at them. They want me to touch them. They want me to take my time. Mm. So that's kind of like the two different paths, like main paths that you can kind of branch off on. I can really tell when somebody wants me to lick their boots. I can also tell when somebody's like not ready for that. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
I used to teach a class, which I'm going to be bringing back this year, called How to Give Good Chair.
Love that.
And the focus of the class, like in the 60 minutes of the class, like the first like 15 is about like the process of boot blacking, but the rest is about flirting, topping, bottoming, service. Like, how can you, the energetic exchange that comes from boot blacking mm-hmm. and leather worship and leather care. And that is more important to me than whether you have the most pristine boots when you leave. You will, to be clear. Like, I, many, many times people will go, oh my God, they look better than they did, like out of the box. And like, that's true. They will. But that's not my main priority.
I love that. I really love that. What about as a receiver? Is it different for you? Or like, what kinds of connections do you prefer? Or does that depend person to person?
You know, as somebody who's like, very like Z-list gamus in this world, in the world of the very specific, like micro zoom in of leather worship. A lot of people get really nervous and they aren't ready to like give that sort of thing to me. Like, a lot of people want to talk to me about boot blocking. They want a mentorship vibe.
Oh, I get that.
And so I bring that out in people. I'll sit for people. I sat for someone the other day who was like, oh my God, Internationals with like 2011, like that's wild. Like, oh my God. Like, and then teasingly, like while they're working on me, they like kind of were like, oh, you know, like you've been in the scene for a long time. You're kind of a little bit of a dinosaur. And I was like, you just called me a dinosaur. Are we flirting? Like, I don't really want to be a dinosaur. And also like, I ain't that old, honey bunny.
Yeah,
but like, that's
yeah.
the thing too, is that like, there'd be some babies that were like 7 years old when I was starting to do leather worship. So for them, I do seem like a dinosaur. I do seem like I am very old.
Oh my God. I never called anyone in their 30s old when I was in my 20s. Just saying. Like, I don't think that's...
I know, me neither. I like don't even... I like age is just a number or whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't even see it. But there is a little bit of a... I think people get nervous.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that they want to see me as a resource. So I'm not necessarily getting the same sort of reception that I, it's not as sexy, and which is fine. Like, that's the community building part, right? Like, I understand, like, that's my positionality and that's totally fine. But people aren't like, you know, like, I don't remember the last time somebody licked my boots on the stand. Do you know what I mean? Because like, by the end, I think they're just like, wow, like, yay, we had like a connection. We talked about our feelings, you know?
Well, so that was actually what I was just about to wonder, is what sort of connection, or like what would you like to feel from a person, or what type of connection wants to be in place for it? Like, is licking considered more intimate for you? Like, how do you kind of like think about it? And what, you know, in a theoretical situation where you might receive that, what would you want it to be like?
I don't necessarily, okay, this is the part where it's just like me just being a slut. Like, you know, like, I don't know the names of the people who sit down for me. I like probably sometimes... People will be like, oh, I sat for you like last month. And I'll be like, absolutely. I say that with love. Like, I lick a lot of people.
Yeah.
I lick a lot of people. So I don't, and every one of them is very special. And also part of it is leather care and leather worship for me are intertwined. Some people see them as very separate. Like, some people will only lick their tops boots. Some people will only lick their daddy's boots, their mommy's boots. Do you know what I mean? But for me, I'm like, gotta catch them all. Like, do you want it? I will give you the time of your life. Like, I'm very thorough with my mouth. So that's very important to me.
Wait, does that mean you lick the whole boot?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And depending on how like nasty someone wants to get, and depending on like the mood I'm in, like I'll sometimes even like put the stiletto heel in my mouth. If it's a heel, like, you know, fillet the heel, like lick the sole. There's something very abject about someone licking the bottom of your boot, especially when you live in a city. So like, some of it is also like things that are abject are hot. So the concept of licking someone's boots specifically, because you can lick all leather. Do you know what I mean? Someone like, when somebody comes to me in like a beautiful leather corset, oh my God, so much fun, sexy, sexy, sexy. Then I'm literally licking their whole torso, right? Like, and holding them tight and like clutching them and stuff. That's incredible. But there's something kind of like nasty about someone who's a literal like definition of a bootlicker, right? Like our society has like a lot of fucked up concepts of bootlicking, right? Like, do you know what I mean? Like it's connected to this concept of like debasing yourself and like trying to get ahead by debasing yourself and all this stuff. So the concept of taking something that is debasing and instead turning it like, that's the definition of horny, right? Like doing something that is abject or debasing or not quite right and making it into a sex affair. You know what I mean? Making it into a sex event, you know, is like a lot of people get like really upset and even more horny about it, you know?
Wow. So, okay. So between the first time in New York where you were on your knees from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and like now where you have amassed this kind of knowledge and leadership in your community, what other like turn-ons, turn-offs and explorations, leather or not, have you like discovered about yourself?
You know, I joke, I'm a voyeur at heart. Like I'm happy to just be in the room. I'm really, really happy to just be in the room. I joke that like, I'll be the guy walking around, like eating a sandwich at the sex party being like, do you need more lube? You seem thirsty. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm very happy to just be present, which means that like, I've also both experienced and witnessed things that I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's hot. Ooh, yeah, no. And it's so interesting to me. I don't tend to have like a visceral reaction to things. I tend to like, I think maybe that can be a little connected to like levels of shame. Like I feel like when we're having a reaction, like it can be connected to shame. I don't have a lot of those reactions. And this is also funny because I'm a tattoo artist. I get really overwhelmed by what's known as like hook play or like hook suspension or needle play when something about the sharp object going through flesh and coming out totally fucks my shit up.
Really?
I know. And it's not like I haven't witnessed it or been around it or like also in terms of like the tattoo world and the kink world, like it's one of the areas that like really overlaps. Like I've been at tattoo conventions and people have been doing hook suspension because there's a little bit of that sort of like underground like fuckery. It gives me a feeling, even talking about it right now, I'm having that like sort of like, it gives me like weird goosebumps, like something about it is making me go, no. Which makes me wonder, like, at some point, will I eventually, like, be like, I must do it? Because it obviously scares me. Yeah. It obviously scares me.
What is the fear? Like, what's the fear feel like?
I think the word visceral, again, comes to mind. There's something that makes my whole body have a heebie-jeebie reaction to the witnessing of the pierced flesh. I am positive that in the right hands, this would be very horny for someone. Like I'm fully aware like the thing I'm describing may be the exact reason why people love it. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's that fine line between like fetish and fear. Like I, for some reason have crept over to the fear side of the fetishization of that. Whereas other people, I know it's part of the reason they love it. The same exact things that I'm describing, the way the flesh bunches, the way that the object is going through, like I'm pretty certain that is also the ultimate reason why people are like, this is the only thing I want to do ever. Wow. Like people who are really into piercing, really into needles, like I'm positive about it. But something about it makes me feel like something dangerous is about to happen to my body. Like it's a, oh no.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
Oh no.
Our animal bodies are like, don't poke my container. Yeah.
Yes, that's, I think, a part of it. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
You know, I've had, like, when I go in to get, like, blood drawn for things, like, I have to look away. I have to be like, oh, there's a needle entering into my body. Mm. And inevitably, 9 out of 10 times, the phlebotomist is like, well, you're covered in tattoos. And I have to be like,
it's different.
You are a medical professional and you, like, the tattoo needle isn't going into any further past the second layer of skin. I was like, if my needles were going that as deep as your needle, I should be arrested. Like that is not how you tattoo. Like it's not the right, it's not, these are not the same. It's not a fear of needles. It's a fear of the blood coming out. Exit.
I love watching it personally, like in my own self, but I'm a, you know, medium masochist. And so I'm like, is it going to hurt this time? And I like to watch it get filled up and I feel glad it's not a tick. And I'm also like, it makes me feel like strong kind of, or whatever, you know, like you can take my blood, but I'm still alive. Ha ha ha. You know, like,
no, listen, I totally get it. Like, I get it. Like people that do like the really intricate patterns and like add baubles to it. I watched a scene again, because I'm happy to voyeur. I watched a scene where there were 6 people in a circle. They had needles that were all attached to each other via fishing line.
Oh, that would scare
and
me.
And then all of these tops were walking around and single tailing them. And so what would happen was a little bit of a like scientific reaction where if person number one got single-tailed and they went like this, everyone had an experience. Yeah. Like it was a ripple effect.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And I had to sit far away enough that I could experience it as a larger scene and see how they were getting pulled on because that was too much for me.
I see.
And I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, I'm always willing to be in the room. I'll say yes to anything. And then I'll say no when I don't want to do it anymore.
I love that. I love that. How did you develop that skill? Is it something that you've always had or is it something that you like cultivated over time?
I've always been really curious and I've always been very non-judgmental. I have a wide squick factor. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I do. I have a low disgust threat. Like you have to be pretty disgusting to disgust me.
I've joked that like you want somebody with a low squick factor and who is a voyeur, like you will always be safe because they're going to notice everything that happens, right? I've been in rooms, I've been in scenes and I've like been like things have happened and I've been able to be the person who's like, because I'm not going to feel grossed out or confused or scared of what's happening, you know, even if it might like make me a little like after the fact, there might be like in an emergency, for example, it might after the fact, my body might be like, whoa, a thing happened. But I'm the man you want in an emergency because I'm not going to be grossed out. I'm not going to be like, oh, no, I can't. And that's always been a factor. Like I'm willing to walk through the door if it's open. And then sometimes I'll know, like once I walk through the door, you know what? I just don't want to walk through this door again, but at least I walk through it.
Yeah, yeah. Reverse out. What kinds of emergencies might happen?
Okay, I'm gonna. This is the my voyeurism joke. Are you familiar with body storytelling? Have you heard of body storytelling?
Body, like BAWDY. That was the first sex podcast I ever listened to, and I felt so overwhelmed. Like this was probably a decade ago, and I remember listening to it and being like, I don't even know what they're talking about. How will I learn about sex? I'm never gonna have sex like I want, you know? And so that's my, and then I listened to like two episodes and then got scared and went on this whole journey.
Yes. I mean, it makes complete sense because body storytelling is sort of like the moth in the sense that like no one's going to explain what the fuck's happening. They're just going to tell a story. Yes, do you know
I
know, what I mean?
Which is why I try to create a lot of context so that people know
lots
where people are coming from. Mine's opposite because I was like a little autistic girl trying to be like, what's happening? Where's the connection?
Right.
Also,
absolutely.
I'm confused. Yeah.
Yeah, like, why do I feel so horny and also scared? I told the story of body storytelling a million years ago, but I was at a sex party that took place in Connecticut that one of my sweeties used to run called Queer Invasion. R.I.P. Queer Invasion was a fantastic party. It was a lovely party. In the state of Connecticut, you are actually able to consent to assault.
Oh.
So, yes. And so Queer Invasion took place in a warehouse that was literally right next to one of those cop shops where they all like dropped off their cars and shit. It was weird. It was weird to walk into a sex party and be like, hi there, officer. And they were right there. Like it was fucking strange.
Did they ever come to the parties? Probably not. Probably not.
No, no. Thank goodness. Yeah. Who wants them there? My wife was being bullied by two of our dear friends. They were doing a sort of like forced femme scene, you know? And I'm like eating a sandwich, like watching them do. And right next to them, the thing to know about the space, the queer invasion is that it was called Queer Invasion because like approximately 300 queers would come and be in this warehouse dungeon space that was actually run by a bunch of straight people. And so, yes. And so of course they made so much money off of us. We were the most interesting event that they had, but it also meant that the members, it was a members only club. Those members could come on any night. And of course, they loved coming to Queer Invasion nights because it was much more interesting and full and vibrant. And we're all very out for blood and dirt bags. And so two of the society members, and I bring this up mostly because I don't feel like this would have happened with our people. So I'm standing and I'm watching my wife get force femmed to the left. And in the seat, on the horse next to them, this much older gentleman crawls onto the horse. And his top, this very tall woman, is getting him set up so that she can do a bunch of impact on him and, you know, has a bunch of implements laid out. And he realizes that he still has his glasses on. And so he goes to remove his glasses and he's on the horse though. So he goes to remove his glasses and he's elevated a little bit. He folds them up and it's one of those things where like, I wasn't close enough to take his glasses from him. I don't know if she clocked that he was doing it. Who really knows? But he went to put his glasses down and he fell off the horse and had a cartoon style crunch happened. And his arm was at a perfect 90 degree angle. He broke his arm.
Damn. Like,
broke his arm right there. And that's the thing about being a voyeur, is that I literally was like, holy shit. And like, was able to like get him a chair, get him a blanket. Our two friends that were topping my wife, I was like, emergency. And they're both very good. They're like, you know, teachers, parents. And so they were like, oh shit. And so we went into like emergency mode and, you know, had to call EMTs. Like they had to come into we had to stop the sex party. Like, but like, we were the ones that wrapped him in a blanket, took care of him, brought him up to the front, like got him some water, got him some like, you know, candy. Shit. Like we're talking like guy broke his arm. Oof. Meanwhile, the person who was topping him, she disappeared. she fucking disappeared. She was the one who like, she was the reason he was on that horse.
Oh,
she didn't
damn.
Help at all. And then she fucking ran away.
Talk about a drop. Damn.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Anyway.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, that is like, voyeurs are really helpful. Voyeurs with a low threshold for squick. Like that crunch, I will never forget. It was creepy. Wow. It was a creepy crunch.
Oh my God. I also want to just highlight, I'm feeling pretty inspired by this conversation. I mean, that's a very serious injury, but I'm like, oh, I could go to parties and just be a voyeur. Like I forget sometimes, you know, and also because I get approached a lot. And then I'm like, I don't know. I need you to be able to say everything out loud with words. And if you're not going to do that, I'm not going to play with you. You know, like I need clear communication, and I don't just like go up to people and be like,
we should just put you in a gimp mask, and then nobody will engage with you. And you can just wander around as if.
Yeah.
Like literally we could put you in a gimp mask. We could put you in one of those leather cuffs that makes it look, and then you could literally just be led around, and then you get to experience the whole event from like a sort of inside outside perspective, and nobody gets to fuck with you because it seems like you're kind of in a permanent scene.
That's even better because I was like, okay, if I go to Kinkfest in Portland, then maybe I'll put tape over my mouth and just write shy or like do not touch or like please touch. But here, you know, because I'm like, I do want to be touched. I don't know. I love that. Okay. So we have surfing across bodies. We've heard about some kicking. You mentioned like preferring hands to implements, but do you love some implements? Like if you had to implement, what would you implement?
Oh yeah. I do love being flogged, which is a little bit like yawn. Like who doesn't? It's the most soothing, fantastic experience
in the
world.
It's not yawn though. Yeah. Do you like big? Do you like stingy? Like what kinds of sensations do you prefer to receive?
I prefer thud. The first time I was ever flogged, it was at one of the Dark Odyssey events. This girl that, we had such like a hot, like long distance, like obsessive affair. Like it was so hot. But like we finally got to play together at Dark Odyssey, and I was like, I'll let you do anything to me, pretty lady. Do you know what I mean? Like whatever you want. And she was flogging me. And I remember thinking to myself, damn, it was my first time being flogged. Wow, this like really hurts in a way that like, I guess I'm not as tough as other people. Like this burns. And afterwards she was showing me everything that she used, and her flogger was one that she made herself out of bike tires. So I learned that day that there is a difference between rubber and leather. I was a young kinky person, and I was like, oh, right. Cause the rubber edges are quite sharp on a rubber flogger. And so I was like, I will do whatever you want for the lady. But I did not realize that like people are able to take floggings for like hours and like be in this ecstatic experience because they're not having the experience that I had. I learned from that experience that I much prefer thud to sting.
Yeah. I have a lower tolerance for sting. I like a mixture, but do you get into like the different types of leathers? Because I recently was at a like flogging workshop and they were like deer leather, these types of. So do you like get into those details?
Again, I'm not much of a gearhead. So like, is it made of leather? Love it. Great. Perfect. the people who are gearheads, like I'm so into them. You know what I mean? Like I'm a great pairing with somebody who's going to be like, I'm going to lay out 17 different types of floggers, and they all have different lengths and thicknesses, and they're made from different hide. Like bless them. Fuck yeah. But like, I actually don't even own a flogger myself. Like the floggers we have are my wife's. Like, and I'm a simple man. Like I just want to like, what are you into that? Like, there must be a word for this. I mean, some of it, like, you know, Dan Savage calls it like GGG, but for the most part, like, if you really like it, I'm going to figure out how to like it. Like, I'm probably going to like it with you. You know what I mean?
I have a highly responsive desire in that way as well.
Yeah. When someone's horny for something, it makes me horny because you're so excited about something that I'm like, yeah, be a nerd for this thing. Like, oh my God, like, that's great. Like, cool.
It's my favorite way to learn about stuff too. And I'm such a good, like, service human. I mean, I'm switchy, but my top parts come from a deep, whatever I'm doing, it's always in service to my larger mission, which is to make the world a sexier, more loving place. And, you know, if I'm in a play space, hopefully to also have pleasure for myself. Although a lot of pleasure for myself comes from pleasing people, you know, and so then balancing that out and finding, you know, making sure that I'm in spaces where those people, I'm going to say, deserve to be pleased in that way. You know, like that's kind of like where I'm at right now. And so finding that community space, how did you find your people? Is it just small community? Is it like, have you ever struggled in community aspects, or do you just like find your people and there they are?
You know, I feel really blessed. Again, I think it goes back to having been sent to summer camp. I won't lie, like not to seem like I'm proselytizing about summer camp, but when you are flung as a small person, I went to summer camp from age 9 to 16. I had to know how to meet people. I didn't go with other people that I knew when I went to those camps as a child. So like, you got to kind of figure out, like, you know, of course I was embarrassed, uncomfy, anxious about it when I was younger, but then I eventually learned how to become friends with people. And I think it really translated into my adult life. I've never really struggled to find my people. And again, it goes back to that Venn diagram of like, there's enough specificity. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I remember one of my first big jobs when I was living in New York City was for a nonprofit theater. And a lot of the straight women who were my colleagues, we were all in our like, you know, mid 20s, and they were all very lonely. They became very, very close friends with each other. I became friends with them in different ways. Like I had my individual friendships with all of them, but they would do a lot of stuff together. Groups, and I remember being confused because I was just like, are your only connections through work? Like, how are you only making connections through work? Because that's not how I make connections. You know what I mean? Like, that's subsequent. Like, if I find myself madly in love with you after discovering that we work together and like you're a really cool person, that's great. But that's like an accident. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not the context. And part of what I realized is that folks that aren't like on the queer spectrum in some capacity and don't have maybe some level of underground sexuality or specialized interest, they actually don't have an entry point for how to build community.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There isn't like a place for them to go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's like you have church if you do that, maybe sex if you do that, and then like maybe some other, you know, I know some bird watching groups, some hiking groups, but it's like, also, we grew up in a society, I mean, I'm 34, turning 35, and it's like, I definitely ate the productivity narrative pretty heavily, you know, and I think I do have a work kink, like, but also, I grew up with a mom that was like, make your work your play, and I don't think she meant for me to take it as far as I've taken it. I also am lucky that, like, I am an artist, so my work is my, like, greatest love, but it's like, I totally know what you're talking about, and I really want to create spaces that like meet that. And also I'm like, I don't know if I'm a community builder yet. I'm gaining the skills. So you're a person who others in your community look to for mentorship. Do you feel like you still have people to grow from, or like people that like give you a holding feeling? It sounds like you do, but I'm just curious what that texture is like for you.
I do. I mean, I think that's something that's really important to emphasize. It's a leather community. It's queer, it's straight, it's pansexual, it's everything, it's nothing, it's very sex work friendly. And that is very important to me. And something that is specific to the leather community, like there's obviously like, you know, there's kink, you know, there's sex work, there's like, and then there's the overlaps of all of these things.
Yeah.
But like leather specifically is about lineage. Mm. It's about recognizing like where you've come from and where you're going and where you're at. And the strongest, I think, community builders and community members are folks who are aware that they're part of like an intricate web, and there's a history. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel that way about queerness. Do you know what I mean? Like we are where we are because of people that came before us, and we need to not just honor them, but also like be aware of the lineage. And so when you take that and you add the queer leather part of it, I feel very blessed that I have people who are both older and the same age as me, that we like, we hold each other accountable. We make space for each other. We can call each other when something is strange. Like, and I was just having this conversation with somebody who I do consider a friend, but like, we were talking about how like one of the strengths of the concept of community is that you don't even necessarily need to want to play, hang out with, or like fuck those people. You may not even like some of the people who you regularly see in your community. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason we're in a community is that we can figure out how to all be in the same space and do so from a place of care. Mm. And that is like also very restorative to me and very important. And so In the last year, I've sort of accepted, speaking of being a dinosaur, I worked on an event for the Museum of Contemporary Art where we brought the Carter Johnson Leather Library to yes. MoCA. And Mama Vi, who's known me since I was like 20, so she's known me for a super long time, kept calling me Uncle Katie. And I, at one point, was like, I'm not really an uncle yet. Like, I'm still a baby. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she was like, look around at what you just did. And look at all of the young people who are asking you all these questions. I've been watching them do it. She was like, I'm really sorry, but you're an uncle now. Like, and I was like, and so like when an elder in your community looks at yeah. you and is like, I dub thee yeah. uncle, like you just got to fucking lean in. So I'm just leaning in.
I love that. I want to circle back to Templeton for a second. Like, like, have squishy bellies or like anything like that, you know, kind of come up in your adult life? Or was that just kind of a formative experience?
You know, I've done a lot of thinking about this. I mean, I like all bodies. Mm-hmm. I do not discriminate on the basis of anything. I'm just like, you seem charismatic and cute. Yes. Like, yeah. let me touch you. Like, yeah. I have no like preferences. Totally. I don't have a type or anything Same. Like that. One of the things to hearken to is Tom of Finland illustrations. Like, those illustrations are, I think, a really good example of the sort of like more adult relationship to the concept of things that are bulbous and gorged. Like, the men in these illustrations, Tom of Finland is quoted as saying, like, so when he started doing the illustrations for what was called pictorial physique, it was before photography. And so his illustrations back early on were much more realistic. And then the advent of photography happened. And he basically was like, the only way to get these motherfuckers to like my work is to do something that photography cannot do, which is make these men something that is unrealistic and bonkers. Yeah. And so he started drawing these men with these bulbous muscles, like pecs like this, you know what I mean? Like, and, yeah, you know, yeah. like their dicks are huge and they're throbbing, you know what I mean? And so my theory is that, like, I really do like when people are just like tight in their leathers and their clothes. Like, there's also an illustrator. Oh my gosh, I'm going to forget his name. I think he's Japanese. He's really known for what's these illustrations of for something known as queening. Are you familiar with queening?
No.
Queening is face sitting. It's when somebody sits on your face.
Oh. Okay, maybe I didn't know that.
Just puts their booty like on your face.
Ooh,
and
okay.
There are these famous black and white illustrations, again, like gorgeous, of these very like sort of Amazonian, like burly, gorgeous, curvy women. And these tiny little wimpy men, some of them, like, for instance, there's one in particular that really stands out to me. I think that she's like maybe like doing the dishes or like cooking, and she has a small naked man. She's belted him to her butt, and his face is just consumed, just like completely smushed, and you can see the like bulbousness of her big booty like consuming his face, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that's really fucking hot and really incredible. So that's my theory as to like how that really became a thing. Like, I find that so horny.
I love that so much. Zooming out a little bit, I would love to hear, how, if at all, do you feel like societal norms have affected your personal pleasure?
Controversial. I don't think they have. I have been for a super long time. Like, I don't look like and move through the world like a regular schmegula person. You know what I mean? Like, when people like close their eyes and say like, woman, like, I don't come to mind. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't look that way. And so I haven't found myself personally, like, the government hasn't reached into my bedroom in the ways that it is with other people. I've always done a lot of like work around like pro-choice and access to abortion, and have done a lot of like, one of my first illustration jobs was working for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England and doing a bunch of posters and educational materials for them.
Fuck yeah.
I've always done a lot of really important work with all that stuff. And like, I've never been on birth control. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't fuck like that. And I touch all bodies, but like, I'm not regularly enough in need to protect myself that way. So. I'm always going to fight the good fight, and I continue to. And like, I'm not personally having an issue with the fact that I don't have access to certain things right now. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Is there anything like on your erotic bucket list, personal bucket list, creative bucket list that you like still want to explore?
I mean, any door that someone wants to open, again, I'll walk right through it. I'm ready. Like, roll out the carpet. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody looked at me and they were like, it's time for you to get over your fear of needle play and I want to pierce you, I would be like, okay, like, all right, like, take me in hand, like, take me in hand, like, you know, like, for everything that I'm like, oh no, I simply cannot with that. Like, I'm just fully aware that, like, if the right person with the right vibe was like, I want to try this thing, I'm ready to make it so you feel really safe, let's push your boundaries far.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah.
I was, so there's this really incredible event photographer who's been photographing a lot of the Leather Dyke events for the last, like, almost 30 years, named Janet Ryan. Janet Ryan and I are both the same size. So often at events, like, you'll see the two of us, tiny little butches running around, like, taking photos, doing things. Like, her photos are all over the place. Highly recommend looking her up. I remember one of the first scenes that I saw with her, she got turned into a dragonfly with needles. They had found, like, basically, like, dragonfly wings. And whenever she would, like, flex her back, the wings would kind of go like this because she had all of these piercings. Like, and we're talking like hundreds of needles in her back.
Yeah.
Cool
yeah.
shit. And we all grabbed dinner afterwards. It was me, her top, and Janet. And I said to Janet, you know, I must have been like 24 when we had this conversation. I was like, tell me more about what is exciting to you about, like, hooks and needles. Like, why is that exciting? And she looked at me and she went, listen, I'm in my early 50s and the fuse to get to a certain type of high is getting longer because I've done so many things.
Mm.
And so now to reach that euphoria that I used to get from things that weren't this extreme, I'm becoming more extreme as I age because I've now experienced so much that my library is getting really full. So I'm pushing my boundaries. And I think about that regularly. Like, yeah. you know, I don't know what the next thing will be for me, but I know that there's like a precipice that I'll probably reach where, like, I'll know, like, yeah, like this is the one, you know?
I love that. I think it's so fun to not know personally. I mean, in certain contexts, right?
I love not knowing. Yeah. I love not knowing. I am very fond of saying, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a superpower, I think, in some ways. I mean, I know we live in a world where everyone's trying to control everything consciously or unconsciously, and, like, we need a certain measure of sense of control to feel safe. But it's like, for me, the world is so chaotic and unpredictable. And because I either misread or misinterpret or too accurately interpret social norms or cues so often that there's human landmines wherever I go, you know, I notice that creates, like, a fear that has become my superpower. And also, you know, the bane of my existence, because I don't have assumptions. I feel like I never know anything, you know, which is why I sit down and I ask people the same questions over and over again. What other kinks? You don't have to go into great detail, but, like, what other things have you explored that we haven't mentioned yet? Like, we got some leather stuff. We've heard about needles in the future, but, like, is there other stuff that you've, like, gotten into that's just been, like, fun or weird, or that you've backed out of or been like, nope, closing that door now? Like, what other? Just give us a little list.
Yeah, I mean, so on the laundry list, getting the shit kicked out of me, so fun. Kicking the shit out of other people, delightful. I do love piss. I'm not necessarily flagging it. Like, I'm not, like, seeking it out. But in the right context, I'm totally ready. I get pee shy, so I can't be a switch with...
Really?
with being... Yeah, like, I'm like, I have, like, so much bravado, and then I, like, you know, like, whip my dick out, and I'm ready, and then I'm like, oh...
Even if you drink a lot of water?
The only time that it has really been great is when I've had, like, a lot of beers and, like, the inhibition has been, like, maybe smoothed out. You know what I mean? Like, I have to pee, and also, like, you know, like, all inhibitions, including in my bladder, are, like, a little gone. So that's definitely really exciting. I also just, I love to suck on people. So, like, so much of my time, like, this is the thing about being, like, a queer weirdo, is that, like, a lot of cis boys, like, I always joke that, like, there are so many of these leather boys that, you know, primarily gay, sometimes straight, like, they don't know what to do with me, but when they do know what to do with me, it's really fun. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I always think to myself, like, you're a little queer. Like, if you're letting me put your dick in my mouth, you're a little queer. Like,
totally.
You know, you may identify as, like, strictly gay, you may identify as straight, but if you like me, mm-hmm. I'm an entree. I'm an entree into a broader world.
Oh. I relate to that. I mean, I look especially heteronormative now that my hair is growing back too. But, like, I mean, I don't know if you experience it, especially with, like, straight cis dudes, when I'm like, so what are your balls like? Are they sensitive? Do they like to get touched? Do they like to get sucked on? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And then I'm like, come here. And they're like,
oh my gosh, I had so much fun with, it's just unfortunate we never got to have more than a few dates, but I had so much fun with a cutie who was in chastity. And basically, even though he is not a trans woman, we basically did a muffing scene because I couldn't access the rest of his junk.
Yeah.
And instead, he guided me through all of the ways that I could reach in and play with the connection points while he was locked up.
That's so hot.
Oh my God, it was so hot. It was so hot. And also, like, so fun. Like, that's the other thing, too, is, like, I'm so ready to be, like, the Boy Scout that's like, tell me what you want with your body.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me more. You know, like, I'll put on a glove. I'll, like, literally just, like, guide me. Like, lie down. Like, you know, I'm a very small person, and he's a very big person. And so, like, he was, like, laid out on my couch. And I was just like, yeah, show me how to reach in so that, like, I can still play with you because you're locked up from your partner. Like, you know, let's make this happen. Yeah.
Wow. You mentioned fisting earlier. Is that something you have engaged in?
Yes, I love fisting. I can be fisted, but I need, this is where it becomes like a little, is it demisexual? Like you need a little bit of emotion. I can't just be fisted by like person number two. I need a little more intimacy for that. But again, tiny person, I've been the start of many fisting trains because I'm a good warm up. My little hands.
Yeah.
I'm really sad. There was a fisting party at Precinct this past weekend, and I'm very sad that I was working and I couldn't make it. But I had some people who went that are going to report back to me about how it was. But
oh my God.
Yeah,
feel free to send any of them our way too. I
love those
stories. Yeah. Oh my God. That's so cool. Okay. Little question here, just for the world. What do you think we need to make our planet a more sexy, connected, and loving place?
I think that we need to have a stronger foundation of like open communication, like across the board.
Yeah.
To your point about like no assumptions, I think that people need to be willing to talk and listen, and that will like remove so many issues overall in the end, like open-hearted conversation across the board, which I know is like a little like we should talk, but like it's I don't know, like I feel like every time someone's having an issue with somebody, or even like I've fallen madly in love with reading the Am I the Asshole posts on Reddit. I really like those posts, and 9 out of 10 times the answer is, did you talk to them? Did you have a conversation?
Most of the questions that I get are like, how do I talk to my person about this? You know, and oddly enough, too, a lot of times they have talked to their person. So there's like something else behind that question. And
yeah,
if we were taught differently, I think how to speak, you know, and also it is so confusing that people have the assumptions and they just don't realize when their assumptions are different. Like that's probably the number one point of social freeze that I encounter in the world where I'm like, I do not know how to proceed because I see the disparity and I don't know how to connect it, you know, and because I know that we don't have the same communication foundations. Okay, wrap up with some fantasy questions. First, if we suddenly lived in a world where everyone in their early adulthood had to serve our country as a sex worker for 2 years, how would you fulfill your civic duty?
I mean, I think I'm emphasizing a point that I've already hit with a hammer multiple times, but like, I think that everybody's leathers would look really good.
Yeah.
I think everyone would look really good. Like, I think I would make sure that everyone's like pristine, frankly. Like my service is that like you are like going to go to your session, or you're going to be like the client, like, and you are going to look very good. No mess here.
Yes.
You're very well greased. You're cleaned and greased. Courtesy of Katie Diamond.
Okay, so now Katie Diamond has an unlimited budget to build the perfect play space, castle, palace, building, whatever structure you want for people to come play and have fun. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What are the details?
Okay, this is very, like, I may as well have the blueprints, like, you know what I mean? Like, I know exactly what I'm going to do for this. All right, so it's a multi-level situation. The first level is like library chill zone. You come in, you check in, you can put your stuff in a locker, you can put yourself in a cubby, but there's like books all around, movies. It's essentially like a library space where you can educate yourself about what's going on. Second level is a dungeon with all the equipment that you can possibly imagine. Like, you know, there's a whole tiled area where people can do piss play. There's a wrestling section that even has, like, you know, the like barriers or whatever. I obviously know nothing about wrestling anyway. Like, there's a whole wrestling section.
Yeah, three.
You know, everything, every fantasy that you can imagine. So that's floor two. Third floor is going to be a sort of modular theatrical space where you can play out different fantasies. So for instance, like if you are a, you know, you decided you're a stable boy, like, well, that's going to be where the horses are and blah, 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 blah. Like, it's where everything's going to be. So you can pretend that you're in the stable. You can pretend that you're a French maid, like costume world. Now the roof is a spa. There's hot tubs. There's hot tubs. There's a sauna. There's a dry sauna. There's a wet sauna. And that is where everybody can like come down and relax. Where also there's like a fully functional kitchen where either you can make a communal meal together, or someone will be like, I'm the chef for the night and I'm going to cook for everybody.
Mm.
It's my four-story fantasy world.
Dude, we have a lot of overlap in our fantasy brains. I fucking love it.
Someone give us a fucking grant. Like, someone
we're working
grant,
on it.
You know?
We're working on it. Yeah. Okay, lastly, if a listener out there is completely not connected yet to any sort of leather community, maybe they're even in a small place where they don't know if they even have one, how would you recommend they start to explore or get involved?
I think that doing a little bit of research on the internet is good. I feel very strongly, and I have since the beginning of the internet, and I do even more now, being able to be in person with people is a really good idea. It is hard. And I can say this as somebody who was in Portland, Maine. Like, I had to drive to Boston. I had to drive to Providence. Like, being able to get to the cities that have the things, I think, is important. If you want to try to have some entry, there are so many incredible books. Honestly, looking up the Carter Johnson Leather Library, looking up the Leather Archive in Chicago, you'll be able to read some really incredible resources. But I think beyond the reading and beyond the online community, it's very important to get into meet space. Meet space. And so with any opportunity possible, going to the next closest city, having a friend, having a buddy, being like, let's explore, I think is just one of the things. And that buddy doesn't even need to be kinky. They just need to be somebody who's like, your pleasure is exciting to me, so let's go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a huge thing. Luckily, there's something called the Eagle. Eagles are leather bars that are actually throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can type in insert city, insert area here, Eagle, and you're probably going to find a leather bar somewhere within the area. If you're in a pretty rural area, it gets difficult. You know what I mean? It gets lonely. And so that's where the strength of the internet does help. But the community building, we need the somatic experience of being in the same room as our people. And so being able to find yourself a leather bar, find yourself an Eagle. Sometimes people do individual rope groups too. So like FetLife has been really interesting where you can sort of be like, I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee, and everything is really far, far apart. And is there like a public space where people are meeting for something called a munch?
Mm-hmm.
People can find a munch somewhere. And then you're meeting at like a diner and, you know, there's a safety factor and not just going to like immediately a dark basement room. And then you can feel out whether you even enjoy the company of some of the people that are going to be in your more local community.
Beautiful. Okay, very lastly, if people are in the Los Angeles area and want to get tattooed by you, like, what's your style? What's your vibe?
Yeah, so I consider myself like a cartoonist. I'm very illustrative. I love drawing animals. I love drawing plants. I'm very obsessed with what I like to say is like macabre but cute. Mm-hmm. Like, I was describing this to a client the other day. Like, I'm not Freddy Krueger. I'm more like Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
Love
I mean?
It. I do.
Like things that are dark, but damn, that's cute. Cute and dark. So I've been doing a lot of my versions and representations of death. I love concepts of like decay, death. But again, like it's kind of death.
Yeah. Lovers, you can find Katie Diamond on Instagram at KDDiamond, at KDDiamond.com, spelled out Katie. Links are in the description below, and commonground.inc. Katie, thank you for being a guest on X Stories.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a delight.
So delightful. Lovely humans, thank you for listening. If you appreciate the work that I put into this podcast, I would love it if you took the time to leave us 5 stars and a nice review wherever you get your podcast, especially Spotify, since last year's troll attack on our ratings is still affecting our ability to be found via search. I do love getting to know you and hearing your stories and meeting you lovely humans in real life. And remember, if you want to collaborate, apply to be a guest or leave us a single story voice memo via xstoriespodcast.com or sexstoriespodcast.com. Sex stories are always going to be my favorite, but now I also have question lists for love, friendship, dating, relationships, marriage, divorce, secrets, and so much more so that we can learn about connection through each other's experiences. I fucking love getting your emails and voice memos and receiving thoughtful noodle messages. It truly is hearing from you that fuels this work for me. And if you want to go deeper with me, get to know me, and support this podcast in meaningful, concrete ways, find me on Patreon, OnlyFans, FetLife, Venmo, Cash App, and all social media platforms at YOLee, or work with me privately for photo and video shoots, relationship support, creative breakthrough sessions, and retreats. YOLee.com/links is where you can find the list of all the ways to play with me, and the link is in the description below. Thank you for joining me to spread ripples of love, to co-create a world where taking care of each other is the norm. Thank you for spoiling and inspiring me with your stories and your support. Please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember to share stories in the name of lovely human connection.